You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 601, recorded for Tuesday, May 21st, 2019. Don't give Jason your password. Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Today on the show, we are joined by our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, Jason Schmidt, to discuss Chapter 9 of the book, Faithfully Connected, Integrating Biblical Principles in a Digital World. Up today, the last chapter in the book on digital security. Lots of good talk about passwords and trying to reinforce that to your kids and to your faculty as well. Special treat, we interviewed the authors of this book. Ben and Jake join us to talk a little bit about why they wrote the book and some of their experiences that maybe helped them shape the content of the book. So you're not going to want to miss that. We have news and tech, Wells Now, picks of the week, something called Form Mule from Jason. I think you're going to be interested in if you do anything with Google Sheets, especially. Ministry resources, great community feedback, and a whole lot more. Stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody, to episode 601 of the Wells Tech Podcast. We're recording this on May 21st, 2019. A little show about technology and ministry. We've been doing it for just a few years, and alongside for all of the time, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, right here in my cozy confines of the office here in Waukesha, Wisconsin.
Waukesha, Wisconsin is experiencing springtime. I can say officially that there are baby robins in a nest right outside the window at the Center for Mission and Ministry. So happy to be here.
You got to post a picture. Did you get a picture?
I did get a picture. It's on my Instagram, but yeah.
Last time I looked, there was one and three to come.
And one beak poking through an egg. Okay. So exciting times.
That's cool to see. And it's late this year. I've got some slow-budding trees at the house, but it always has come. So looking forward to more.
Thankful for our creator for
another thing
seasons.
We're looking forward to is having Jason Schmidt join us, our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent from, I don't even know. I'm assuming he's still down in Nebraska these days, but fixing to move.
Yep, I'm fixing to move. That's exactly right. Yeah, I'll be joining you guys in the great state of Wisconsin starting about the middle of the summer. So excited for our relocation up to the Green Bay area.
Perfect time to move to Wisconsin in the summer.
That's what I hear. Yeah, I haven't been in Wisconsin in the summer. No, I'm just kidding. It'll beat our move from Florida to Omaha, though. I think it was probably 96 degrees on the day that we unloaded the truck when we moved here. So I'm looking forward to not quite that hot.
Well, we're looking forward to having you a little bit closer. So
right.
Blessings on that move, and thanks again for joining us. Everybody who has listened to just more than a few podcasts recognizes that when Jason is on the show, we're going to talk about education technology. Jason, refresh our new listeners about what you do.
Well, currently I am the technology coordinator for Bennington Public Schools, just outside of Omaha. So, deal with students and teachers and technology and professional development. I like to say my current job description is other duties as assigned, which kind of fits a lot of people that I know too. What I'm into is I will be the instructional technology coach for the O'Connell Falls Public School District. So more strictly working with teachers and less on the IT and infrastructure side. Staff development and instructional coaching and those kinds of things. Also, with regard to technology. So still have an opportunity to work with that and more of an ability to work directly with teachers, which is something I'm really excited about.
Okay. And today we've rescued you at least for an hour from swimming in Chromebooks, haven't we?
Yeah, well, I'm avoiding the Chromebook swimming for a little while, and then I get go to a meeting this afternoon. So I do appreciate having a staff that I can rely on that's going to be able to take care of that stuff. Although I just sat down at my desk. I had to turn my space heater on because I'm freezing. But, you know, we'll get through that part of it, too.
Yep. Get to see what all those students did to their Chromebooks over the course of the year. Always interesting.
It certainly is.
Well, we are going to talk about Faithfully Connected, a book we've been reading, reviewing, kind of talking through with Jason and Rachel Feld. The book is subtitled Integrating Biblical Principles in a Digital World. It's been quite a journey talking a little bit about a lot of different things related to you know, the place of technology in the classroom, the place of technology in the life of a student. Lots of areas that I hadn't thought real deeply about, but I think the book has been a real good reason to kind of be a little bit more intentional about how you approach using technology and maybe a better appreciation for how students or what students need to deal with. And this chapter is no different. We're talking about digital security. It kind of saved one of those really nutty topics, nutty meaning hard to crack topics, till the very last. And this is kind of a scary one.
This is one of those things that I probably the thing that I get the second most emails about are issues, you know, that have to do with this kind of a topic. You know, either somebody gets an email that they've been hacked, or ransomware, or you know, all of these other things that are it really makes people panic, because there could be a lot of harm that comes through, you know, the wrong people getting access to your information. So, I was glad to see that this is a topic that gets a pretty thorough coverage in the book here.
They do cover it well. I think there are some things here that we can all learn from, but we get these lessons pretty regularly, or maybe we're more in tune to current events and dangers that are out there as adults, and kind of conveying that importance to students, not just teaching them about what a good password structure is or that they should have different passwords or whatever. They can walk away, and the book even points it out, you know, whether they actually make those wise choices on their own when they have the option. It reminded me, Martin, I can't tell you how many times we've had conversations on the podcast about maybe good backup policies or whatever, but then I personally maybe slack in some of those areas or whatever. So it's all about them actually taking the actions, and that's pointed out well in this chapter.
Jason, as you read this chapter, I'm sure you thought of some personal experiences and opportunities you've had to impress this on students, and maybe even part of your position there, or at least educating your teachers on how to do this. How do you get through to the kids that this is really important stuff?
You know, you kind of tricked me with that one, Martin, because it's a constant battle. You know, we have, and teachers and students are both equally bad.
Right.
You know, your kids, we'll have kids where, you know, they'll come in for help with something, and we won't even get started. And they'll be like, well, do you want my password? And we're like, well, no, I don't need your password, you know? And it could be something, I mean, it's completely hardware. Like they have no concept of, like, you know, when this is a good idea to share and when maybe not, you know, and with teachers too, you know, I have they send me passwords in email like all the time. And, you know, it's just as many times as I tell them not to do those kinds of things, or, you know, you don't share your password with me. They still, you know, even though they know who I am and they trust me, you know, there are a lot of bad actors out there that's not the case. So, you know, it's just better to try and model that vigilance. I kind of feel like Mad-Eye Moody, you know, right? Constant vigilance. You know, we want to make sure that we're watching out for those kinds of those kinds of things that are coming our way. But, you know, I if somebody else figures out the magic way to do that, I'm happily going to learn at your feet, because I have not cracked that nut yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interestingly, in the chapter, one thing that I made a note of was they said, show your own accounts. Show how you manage things personally. And that's pretty revealing to do that kind of demonstration in front of a live classroom or whatever. But definitely talking about it and modeling it is probably the best way to go. Another thing they brought out in the chapter is it kind of seems almost like scare tactics, or this world is a scary place, but also focusing at the same time on our eternal security and, mm-hmm. you know, the fact that we have an identity in Christ that nobody's going to steal and things like that.
Yeah, I think the scary part, Jason, as you're thinking about it, is it is so easy, and the social engineering side of this has become mm-hmm. so good, yeah. quote unquote good, that you know it's very easy for a bad actor, as you call it, or somebody who has ill intentions to masquerade as you, as the technology director or somebody that they yeah. trust, and say, hey, doing a little account cleanup. I need your password to log into you know this account and you know make things right. And somebody who is not paying real close attention could see that and say, "Oh, Jason's asking me for this. Right. I trust. I know him. I trust him.
Yep.
I'll give him the keys to the kingdom here." And I think one thing that crossed my mind, and as I talk about this with different groups and at conferences or whatever, is to tell some stories of people whose identity has been stolen or who've had some serious consequences about just a little slip, just you know something that they thought was innocuous, and before they knew it, it had escalated into you know a long drawn out affair, maybe loss of income, maybe credit cards had to be canceled.
Yep.
You know, all those things can be disaster. And I think at a certain point, you know, kids will get the message, but I think it needs to be, you know, a somewhat diligent approach to say, here's not only what, but here's why this is what could happen.
Yeah. Well, and I always frame that conversation around, you know, it's kind of like getting into a car and driving somewhere, right? You know, anytime we leave the house, or anytime really we get out of bed, you know, we're taking a calculated risk. And you know, you hop on a bike and you don't put a helmet on, you know. A lot of people go out there without helmets on, and you know, they don't crash with their bike, and they, you know, and they're fine. But you know, you're exposing yourself unnecessarily sometimes with some of these practices. And you know, I when I'm talking to kids about, you know, changing your password or setting a secure password, or I'm doing the same thing with teachers, you know, I'll usually start the conversation with, you know, when you get in the car, do you put your seatbelt on immediately, or you know, do you not put on a seatbelt, or do you ride your bike with a helmet on? You know, it's the same kind of thing. You know, we're exposing ourselves anytime we go somewhere. You know, on the internet, our information is out there. And you know, if we're aware of those risks, we can take steps to mitigate the possibility of something happening. But you know, and then I usually follow that part up with, you know, am I afraid of ninjas? Yes, mm-hmm. I am afraid of ninjas. You know, if a ninja comes after me, I'm not going to stand a chance. And you know, it's the same thing with some of these hackers. You know, yes, there are people out there who do have the capability of taking me down and going through, and there's nothing I can do about it. But I can't live in fear of those kinds of things happening, because, you know, the chances of them targeting me are probably pretty slight. You know, and if they do target me, there isn't anything that I can do about it. So I'm not going to worry about that part of it.
One thing that occurred to me as you were talking and as we kind of think about security here at the Senate office is at what point do you give the tools to the students or the, you know, maybe even the teachers, good tools to practice safe computing? I'm thinking specifically of password managers. So we make available here at the Senate office LastPass, which we've talked about on the show many times. And I'm thinking students of many ages are getting to the point where they have a number of accounts, they have a number of logins, and probably a good need for some kind of password management tool. And that's one of those things like putting on your helmet that can help you enforce strong password generation. It can give you a tool that's going to keep you in good standing as far as, you know, practicing good password management. And obviously security is not just all about passwords, but that's certainly a good step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the more that you can talk to kids about that and put it in front of them, and, you know, and model it for them.
Use it yourself, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, the more effective that lesson is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So chapter 9 was the last chapter of the book, only followed by a brief conclusion where they kind of tied together all the different traits that are covered mm-hmm. in the book. They actually have a really cool illustration where they framed each of the traits in terms of law and gospel, our relationship with God and our relationship with others, and then finally sharing the gospel, things like using communication and literacy and things like that. So a really nice way to tie it up. There's a focus in that conclusion about something they've coined a term, digital faith leadership, where we're actually given this gift and how we use it and how we live our lives digitally can reflect our desire to share the good news, our Christian faith. And one quote I picked up said, use digital media to spread the gospel, show compassion and care for others as Jesus would, and generally focus on the idea of improving the lives of others. The goal of digital faith leadership is to move beyond thinking only of self, using technology to care for people in our church, school, social group, mission plant, or adopted overseas organization. So basically tying all of these different characteristics of this digital life that we lead into a nice package that is Christian focused.
Yeah, they did. I think they did a nice job of kind of taking a, in some cases, a kind of nebulous concept, you know, maybe not always concrete, and making it concrete and applying good Christian principles to it. And that I think it's one of the reasons that I think Rachel uses the book in the way she does at Martin Luther College as a, kind of a good introduction to digital whatever. Both for the kids there preparing for the ministry, but then also to take it with them into the ministry, and kind of had of a nice, curriculum, so to speak, when they get in the classroom and begin to meet some of these objectives with their kids in a very Christian way. That was kind of the best part, I think, of the book.
Absolutely.
Kind of a special interview today. Sometimes we do some of these book reviews and we kind of read it for ourselves and draw our own conclusions. We were blessed to be able to get the authors of this book on the line and to talk with Ben Boeke. Did I get that right?
Close.
Ben
yep.
Boeke and Jake Hollitz, who are both of the authors. They work in different capacities, as you'll hear in the interview, but they decided for various reasons to write this book, but it was really kind of neat to get the background of why this book was written and some of their experiences and approaches to writing the book. So let's take a listen to our interview with Ben and Jake, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about the book.
Joining us on Wells Tech today are the authors of Faithfully Connected, Integrating Biblical Principles in a Digital World. Our Wells Tech audience is very familiar with this book. We've been talking about it for the last, 7 or 8 months, and really excited about its impact that it can have in the Lutheran classroom as we are living in the digital age. So we welcome Dr. Ben Boeke, who is Assistant Professor of Education at UW-Oshkosh, and Dr. Jake Hollitz, who is a principal at St. John's Lutheran School in Orange, California. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, happy to have you. And as is the tradition on Wells Tech, our audience would like to get to know you a little bit more. So maybe share a little bit about your jobs, hobbies, church, family, whatever you want to share.
I can go first. This is Ben. I live in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, right by Lake Winnebago, which is really, really nice. Mm-hmm. I'm married and have two small boys, ages 3 and 1. So I am sleeping well, but they exhaust me. So very tired. I teach literacy classes to pre-service teachers. So all things literacy is what I'm very interested in and enjoy. And I really like working with pre-service teachers. I think they're a great group, and it's exciting to see how education continues to grow and change.
Excellent.
Great. And Jake, how about you?
Yeah, I'm principal out here in California, and I've been principal at the school for 3 years, and previous to that I was a professor, like Ben, teaching literacy at Concordia University in Austin, Texas. And I have a wife and two daughters in kindergarten and first grade. And I really enjoy being in the K-8 realm. Kind of boots on the ground sort of thing, and working with kids that are specifically dealing with these tech issues. I just got back from a trip to the East Coast with my 8th graders, and it was interesting to see some of them with this kind of addiction to their phones and just them using their phones, and really kind of solidified why Ben and I decided to go on this journey together.
Great. That's a great lead into our next question. I'm assuming you're getting a little more sleep than Ben is too.
Yes, my daughters are 6 and 7, so we're kind of over that phase and thankful for it.
Very good. So you talked a little bit about the genesis behind the book, but maybe go into a little bit more detail, either one of you. Why did you decide to write the book, and why this particular topic? You know, taking on a pretty big chore of writing a book is not for the faint of heart. How come you guys jumped in?
Well, Ben was the one who got me started in it. He dragged me into it, so I'll let him kind of start off.
Okay.
So digital citizenship, the framework has been around for a while. It's been around for many years, and many schools kind of use it to talk about how students can be responsible digital citizens. But what we noticed, as I was a former Lutheran school teacher, and Jake's a principal, is that a lot of our teachers wanted to integrate, the Christianity and Lutheranism into their conversations, because we don't separate, our religious beliefs from who we are. But when we're online, when we're digital citizens, what does that look like? What kind of conversations do we have with students about what that looks like? And there wasn't really anything out there that talked about this. And so after working with teachers and students, we realized that a resource would just be this great thing for them to use. And it's more of a service to, I would say, our profession and our vocation, that we really wanted to create this for others.
Jake, why do you think that there was really nothing on the market that addressed this?
I think there was really more of a push to use the technology just for the sake of using the technology versus how to use the technology well, personally. What I've found, like with my teachers, there's a real push for by tech companies to get teachers to use the products without really going into why we're going to use the products. And I think one of the reasons why there really wasn't a piece out there talking about how to use technology well, and especially within the Christian context, was because, and I still see this today, is that the push is for teachers to use the technology, and there's a little push for how to use it well. And I think it's even harder for Christians and in Christian schools to take a look at technology and say, well, it's in the secular world and it's a, you know, it's a piece that God gave us, but to take the time and to slow down and ask the questions, why are we using it and how are we using it and how are we using it well? I think it was really just kind of the speed of society that said, well, we're just using it and we're not going to think too hard about why or in our Christian context. And I think that's one of the highlights of the book is that it kind of teaches you to slow down a little bit and think not just why are we using it, but how is it going to impact us beyond today?
Excellent. And we did, I think we referenced it multiple times on the podcast throughout the months that we've been looking at it. We did see that Lutheran voice coming through in the book. So what kind of areas or how did that shape the tone and the focus of what you were writing? What would we see from the Christian perspective coming out in your book?
I think one of the pieces as Lutherans specifically is that we try to take a law gospel approach with the book. Because technology, there are definitely rules and regulations that we have to follow, but there are definitely the fantastic, great aspects that kind of redeem those poor aspects of technology. And that certainly is something unique to our Lutheran identity. And then also tying it with biblical principles and the Ten Commandments and our catechism was really important for us to do because we really feel that this book isn't just for teachers, but it's for any church worker, from a pastor to a youth worker to a teacher to a parent.
And I would add to that, we were trying to think about the role of vocation in our lives, but mainly vocation in a digital way. So, you know, what does it mean to be a Christian and how do you represent yourself online? What does stewardship look like online? What does it mean to consume information and create information that represents, you know, your beliefs? And we kind of do this naturally, but then to stop and think about it deliberately, especially when working with youth, is any information that they put online now is going to be there forever. And so how do they want to represent themselves? Are they afraid to share that they are believers? And even just thinking about how do churches represent themselves with their websites, their mission statements, when people... most of the time, I would say when people are church shopping, they'll just go to the website and what information is there and what does that look like?
Jake had mentioned in a previous comment that he had observed, you know, the use of technology. Ben, did you have similar experiences that kind of drove you to want to write this?
Yeah, when I was teaching, it was right around the technological boom where my school administration said, all right, everybody's getting a computer and you need to use it. And it was more so about the projects than it necessarily was about, well, what do we think about this? Why do we want to use it? How do we even talk to our students about using technology, not just for academic purposes, but for their everyday lives? And when I was in a Lutheran school, we never stopped and had conversations about the Lutheran Christian perspective on using technology. And so a lot of it was just born out of experiences and the need to slow down and have a conversation and think about how we want to help our, not just ourselves, but others become responsible digital citizens.
So let's go ahead, Sally.
I was just going to jump in. The need was there. You saw this void and everything. So how did you go about going from that point to having a book? What kind of research was involved? What kind of challenges did you encounter? Either one of you can jump in.
I think one of our first challenges was that we didn't live near each other at all. Ben had a lot of knowledge through his doctorate program. I had some knowledge from things that I was seeing in the classroom and kind of boots on the ground, but we didn't live near each other. And so to embark on a book journey where we were thousands of miles away from each other was interesting. And then also using technology in order to write the book also was a challenge, but it was neat to see technology work in our favor.
What kind of technological tools did you use then, Jake?
We use Google Docs primarily, going back and forth and seeing each other write, sometimes in real time, but also just lots of phone calls, text messages, emails, back and forth. I don't think we ever collaborated once face-to-face while writing the book. It was all via a digital communication.
And how long did it take you?
I don't remember, Ben. Do you remember?
I think we started it in April, and then we wrote it. I think we had our final draft submitted by October. So it went pretty fast, but that's the beauty of a co-author, is that
right.
When you get sick of something and you're like, I can't, you need to work on this, then usually they've got fresh eyes to look at it.
It helps to hold each other accountable, too, I would think. Too.
Yeah.
So what kind of research was involved?
So some of the principles I was not familiar with, like in particular digital health and wellness. And what was awesome at the time is that the American Association of Pediatrics just revised all their position statements concerning technologies with children. So, in that particular instance, I read a lot about what doctors recommend for technology use, and that was very new and unfamiliar to me.
It was neat for me, since I was a school principal, I was able to get the voices of my students. And so in the book, when it says student voices, those are real students at my school that I got to interview and get their perspectives of. And that was a really neat process to go through, to hear actual students that I can put a face and a name to. And get their perspective on it as well.
Interesting. Yeah, I really enjoyed those sections. Now, one of the neat parts about the book are the catechetical resources or the lesson plans there. How did those come together, and did you work with anybody on those, let's say get feedback from pastors, etc.?
A lot of it was just using our teaching background.
Okay.
And our deep background within our own Lutheran teaching. As I went through and wrote most of the lessons, I didn't consult any of our pastors. I think one of the things that I've gleaned from working with pastors in the past is that they're not typically taught in seminary how to do a lesson plan. And I think that's one of the strong selling points, is that the lesson plan is there and it's laid out very easily that anybody could teach it. But also the review of our publisher really helped us hone in those doctrinal pieces as well.
Mm-hmm. What kind of feedback have you been getting from the book, from pastors or otherwise?
It's been positive from what I have heard. When I've gone to various conferences within our Lutheran realm, I typically hear from somebody that has purchased my book or read my book or our book. And I also had my own faculty here at my school read through the book as a book study, and it's all something that we agreed that we need to continue to focus on.
Excellent. Can you recommend other books, websites, blogs, anything that can take us further down this path of studying these topics?
I would say the most prominent one is the Common Sense Media. I think they just revamped their whole digital citizenship section just within this past couple months. And they don't necessarily have the biblical principles integrated, but they have got lesson plans, they've got media, they've got activities. They were just a great place to go if you want to know more about what curriculum might look like in your classroom or to use with at home.
Excellent.
I would also recommend to people that they take a look at the standards for technology, either for their individual state or for the standards set forth by ISTE, because it's really important that as you're taking a look at these technologies and figuring out how you're going to teach them and deal with them, that you also make sure that they're tied to real learning objectives that are kind of quantifiable and measurable.
Very interesting. So let's talk a little bit about the future. Maybe we'll start with you, Ben. Other than trying to get more sleep, what other projects are in your future, either together or individually? Anything on the horizon?
You know, the I always want to use Jake's school as kind of a lab school just to mess around and do things in. I think once upon a time we had talked about the importance of social responsibility, the kind of the Christian perspective on what does it mean to be socially responsible. That was really in response to just what's happening in society and how we treat one another. I think there's just tremendous opportunity for looking at innovation in the classroom, whether it's through how the classroom's designed, different technology use. Personally, I'm just interested in how the technological literacies that are, that technology creates kind of match up against the traditional literacies that we see in schools, and how can we find a place for both of those so they can work together.
It's an interesting concept. Do you believe that the teacher who would go through this maybe curriculum or whatever we want to call it needs to be technical or not?
I really don't think so. I think a teacher who even has just basic technology skills could benefit from it, because we're not really teaching them how to use a technology, but just what to be aware of and what to look out for. And I think that while a lot of it could be said as common sense, it really boils down to how do we interact with the students and get them to think deeper, not necessarily to keep them away from things, but to let them dwell on it and think deeper. And I think anybody with any technological level of understanding can access.
So, Jake, did you use your students as kind of a case study or test for what you were kind of working through and writing down?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the pieces that we realized early on was that our students weren't getting any education in digital literacy or technology responsibility until they were in middle school. And one of the things we realized was that we needed to start it probably as early as kindergarten.
Really?
And so our technology teacher here at the school started implementing various pieces talking about responsible technology use all the way down to kindergarten.
Interesting. So, Jake, for anything on the horizon for you, any projects you're thinking about?
You know, one of the things that I just continue to enjoy doing is just talking about and presenting about this. I don't have any book or research projects on my horizon, but I recently got to speak to kind of like a MOPS group, a Mothers of Preschoolers group, and I just don't see it on their horizons for parents of really young children. And it's fun for me to be able to share this information and see their eyes light up and go, yeah, you know, I need to stop using the iPad as a babysitter, and getting them to think a little bit deeper.
Very good. Well, we thank both of you for taking the time to do this. We recognize you have busy schedules, and you know, we're still in the school year, and you have a lot of other things to do. But we certainly want to thank you for both writing the book, which we're enjoying and using as a monthly segment for our show, but also for taking the time to give us a little bit of the backstory of it. Very interesting stuff. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for reading our book. You always wonder if anybody else is going to read it besides yourself, so we really appreciate it.
Yep, lots of people reading here.
Our pleasure. Thanks again, you guys. Have a great day, and blessings on your work.
Thank you. You guys,
thank you.
Too.
Thank you both to Ben and Jake for spending a little bit more time with us about the book. That's kind of neat to be able to talk to the authors.
It is. And yeah, to hear Jake's real classroom experience,
right?
And how it fed into the book contents and everything. It was a great experience. I'll have a link in the show notes. They mentioned the ISTE standards during the the interview, so we'll definitely link to that in the show notes as well.
Yeah, it gives a little bit more of a flavor to the book, knowing that there's real life experiences that these students are real, you know, and mm-hmm. the quotes were real, and that there is this is not just kind of a theoretical approach to a topic, but this is based on a need in real people and real circumstances. So. Thanks again. And it's kind of sad that the book is over, but I think Hopefully it will live on in the lives of, you know, those people who pick it up and maybe even adopt it for their situations.
Absolutely. Really thankful for Rachel. You mentioned Rachel Feld, Professor Rachel Feld at Martin Luther College, for recommending it and sharing her experience. And also for you, Jason, I know that you deal with this kind of thing regularly, and I just want to get a quick plug in for the fact that you're going to be presenting on CHIPA, COPA, and FERPA, and lots of other acronyms probably, at this summer's EdTech Lead Conference that we're having at the Kalahari Resort in Wisconsin Dells. Dates are June 24th through 27th, and there's still time to register, folks. You can sit in on Jason's session and learn even more. We will have a link in the show notes to wellsedtechlead.com where you can get registered by May 31st.
All right, let's move on to our News in Tech segment. Our News in Tech is all about Google this week. Google is often in the news. They had a big, what they call their Google I.O. conference. One of the things coming out of there was a better privacy tool, so very fitting to what we were talking about. But one of the things that intrigues me is what they are, what the article calls a smarter AI assistant. They call it Google Assistant. I think they still do, at least.
Yep.
And one of the things that kind of sets it apart, at least in my mind, is that it very often kind of understands the direction you're wanting to head with your question. So it's it seems to be a little bit smarter than the others, so to speak. Definitely smarter than Siri, at least in my opinion. But they claim they're going to make it smarter. One of the ways they do that is because, well, this is a privacy thing too. Google knows a lot about you. Especially if you use Google services, if you use Gmail or whatever. So you have to kind of be okay with that. But one of the reasons that you use technology, and to a certain degree you have to trust, you know, the tools that you're using, is that it can make your life easier. And I find that the Google Assistant, you know, does a nice job of that as I'm asking it questions or telling it to do different things on my phone, et cetera, et cetera. It does a nice job. So we'll put a link to this article in the show notes. This is an AP article that kind of gives a nice summary of what Google is doing to make your assistant even smarter. So take a look at that. And they do talk a little bit about some of the privacy and security things that they're throwing in there that should make you feel a little bit better about using them. So
excellent. Martin, you and I have talked a lot about EdTech Lead happening this summer. There's another big event happening this summer. That would be Synod Convention.
Right.
And you've done some prep work for that.
Yep, there's a lot of prep work, and you have as well. Synod Convention, for those of you that aren't aware, is a every other year occurrence where we gather about 500-ish delegates from across the Synod. So it's made up of a third of the delegates are pastors, a third teachers. So I don't know, is that still the ratio? Third layman? I think that is. So we try and represent as much of the Synod as possible. They come together and they vote on budgets, they make some decisions. But one of the things that they do to base their conversation on, and we really kind of base the convention on, is the book, something called the BORAM, the Book of Reports and Memorials. And that is not a private document that you need a secret passcode to view. That is available to anybody. And that was recently put online. So if you want, and in that BORAM, that reports of more reports and memorials, it is a good way to kind of get a good state of the Synod sense. So every area puts in a report. So there's a technology report in there, for instance. There's a missions report, and Church Extension Fund and Northwestern Publishing House, all of them have their reports in there. So you can kind of read about what's been going on, but then also future plans for the upcoming biennium, so the next 2 years. So we try and plan 2 years in advance and then share that in the BORAM. So that is available in an online version for you, a PDF version. So if you want to take a look at that, we'll have a link to that in the show notes, as well as a Synod website so you can kind of keep up to date. The Synod Convention is also live streamed. So this is the last last week in July 29th through August 1st is the date of this year's Synod Convention. in Martin Luther at Martin Luther College's campus there in New Ulm, Minnesota.
So the really exciting part of the BORAM starts on page 73. That's where we talk about technology. Uh-huh. And so that's where you want to just flip to right away, folks.
Start there. The rest is gravy. Okay. Very good. So that's the Wells Now segment. I think we're up to our picks of the week, and we always let our guest show host kick things off. Jason, you have a pick of the week?
Yeah. So you mentioned that I'm waist deep in Chromebooks right now. And so between starting last Friday and going through to next Friday, we have to inspect and check about 1,300 Chromebooks, which is a very labor-intensive process. But we have built a lot of efficiencies into the way that we do things now. And we actually we use a Google form to track all of the repairs that need to be done. And then that also we use a tool called Formule. That's my pick. Formule to as an add-on to the form. And what that does is, based on certain conditions that we have, it will perform a mail merge and send an email to the kid, the parent, to our and to the secretary. So if we have anything that needs to be charged back, or if we, you know, for repairs that need to be logged, we have help desk tickets that are generated. And then all of that ends up going out to, it's just an automated process. So what had been something that would have been paper and pencil, like even a year ago, we did everything was done with a sheet of paper, and then we had to enter it into a spreadsheet and then go through and enter it again. We're using things like pre-filled form links and Google Forms and Sheets and mail merges and all this stuff, and it's just been a beautiful system. So I have every intention of recording a screencast to show what that looks like and how we set everything up. I have worked some major magic with Google Sheets that I've never had the opportunity to do before. You know, things like, have you guys ever used the import range function on Google Sheets?
I can't say that I have.
It's amazing. It figuratively changed my life, Sally, when I learned how to do that, because, it's just amazing. So I will hope to get something recorded to kind of show people what we did and how it worked. And it has a wide variety of applications. You know, this could be anything from, you know, like what we're doing with checking in Chromebooks or tracking inventory or things like that. But you could do something like this with VBS registrations, or, school applications. You can schedule parent-teacher conferences with something like this. I mean, there's just amazing opportunities for how something like this could be used. So Formule is my pick of the week.
And I'm assuming, like most add-ons, is free of charge?
100% free of charge. Yep. Super lightweight, really reliable. It's been fantastic. I have it process about 800 emails in like a couple minutes.
Yeah. I've done something similar for the Minnesota District Teachers Conference, where we send confirmation emails and things. And I think mm-hmm. I used Autocrat for that, maybe.
I had started with Autocrat, and it was working great, but I got about 200 entries in, and then it started getting really slow and unresponsive. So yeah. When I switched to Formule, because I was emailing everything anyways, so when I switched to Formule, you know, it doesn't look as nice, obviously, but, you know, I still, it runs more reliably for me.
That's awesome. Yeah, it does my heart good to hear spreadsheets hard at work for you.
Yes.
Very good. Sally, what's your pick of the week?
My pick of the week is looking ahead to summertime and all the fun things that you can explore when you have just a little bit more freedom in your schedule. My husband and I will be doing some maker events this summer. On the weekends and things, we like to get out in libraries and community ed and do that kind of thing. And our go-to source for make type inspiration is Make Magazine. So if you aren't familiar with it, you can check it out at makezine.com. They have incredible articles, a lot of hands-on stuff, and they do summer maker events. We went to a maker fair last summer in Detroit, just really amazing stuff happening there in all different types of media. So from 3D printing to CNC machines to, people making needlecraft kind of things. I mean, it's just all over the board and something for everyone. One thing maybe worth exploring this summer is something they call Maker Camp. They have makercamp.com as well, connected with Make Magazine, and they put projects out there for children to do, and you can actually take advantage of their projects and run little maker events or whatever, but always look forward to seeing what they're going to feature in their Maker Camp arsenal for the summer. And they haven't announced that for 2019 yet, but you can look back at previous summer's projects and get ideas from them. So check out those two, Magazine and Maker Camp. And if you have a chance to go to a maker fair, they're all over the country. Definitely take it in.
Very good. My pick of the week has to do with security and LastPass. We talked about that a little bit earlier in the show. LastPass is a password manager. And basically, you need just one password, a master password, to get into your LastPass account, and it does the rest. Basically, it remembers all your other passwords, creates secure passwords, etc. My pick of the week, however, is not just LastPass, but I don't know if this is a new feature, but there's a new blog post talking about this. Maybe it is new because the post is dated May 2nd, 2019. Never lose access to LastPass with account recovery on mobile. So now there's a feature, a little toggle, and I did this the other day, where you can go into your app, your LastPass app on your Android or iOS device, and enable this that allows you to recover a password if you've recover your password or reset your password if you've forgotten your master password. Now, before this, it was like a matter of life and death if you forgot your master password, because LastPass doesn't know your master password, and that's for security. So you can't call them up and say, hey, I forgot my master password. Can you reset it for me? Not going to happen. You're kind of out of luck. Now, you can set password hints, those kinds of things, but maybe that's not going to be helpful either. So if you've totally forgotten it, but if you've turned this feature on your mobile device, and you still have your mobile device, then there is a way to go through that process and reset it. There's a whole video on how to do it. It's super easy. It took me about 10 seconds to find the place where you turn this on. Now, I haven't tested this yet, but the video makes it seem super easy. So as long as you still have your device, all is not lost if you've forgotten that master password. If you're a big LastPass user, and I am, I probably have 200, 300 passwords for different accounts, et cetera, in LastPass. And a lot of them are these generated passwords. I'd never be able to remember them. And if I were ever to now forget my master password, I do have a backup, because I can use a device that I own to get me back in. So this is probably a feature long overdue. I think they were probably getting a lot of feedback as to, we really need a way to recover this password, because this is a big problem. Your life is kind of, and another reason is that sometimes, and LastPass supports this, you don't have to just put passwords in there. You can put secure documents, other kinds of encrypted things that you don't want, digital assets that you don't want just sitting on a server or on your laptop. You can put those in LastPass as well. And then you get the whole 128-bit encryption, or maybe it's up to 256. I forget what they're at now. But probably a good place to store that kind of stuff as well. So another tip I heard just the other day about using LastPass is sometimes you get to a site where they make you add those hints or those secret questions, security questions, your best friend's sister's first name or whatever. So you can pick those. And sometimes you may not necessarily remember what your answers are, but the tip was take a picture of that, put it in LastPass.
Oh, with a picture.
Take a picture of the screen, right? Rather than write it down or type it in.
I always type it in there. The notes area.
Yeah, there you could do that too.
Okay.
Right. But take a picture, you can put that in LastPass as well. Yeah. So just a great, great tool. There is a free version, but to get the mobile app, you actually have to pay. And it's, I forget what it is. Yeah, it was 12. I don't know if it's still 12, but that'll give you the mobile app. And that's probably a reason, this new feature that they've added, a reason to pay that. So,
yeah, I want to say with the mobile app, it's making use of your fingerprint or facial technology.
Yep.
So it's not asking you to type in the password, but the fact that you've set up that
touch, you can get into your own phone. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right. So,
yep. I set that up too. I thought that was a great idea.
Yep. All right. So that is our picks of the week. Let's move on to our ministry resource.
Jason, we're going to turn to you because we talked a little bit about it being time to read some good books over the summer, and you had a suggestion for us.
Yeah, so I'm participating in a book study on the latest book by Liz Kolb. So if you guys know who Liz Kolb is, she's been in the ed tech circles. We've written a couple of books, a lot of things about, like, you know, using cell phones with kids and cell phones in the classroom and personalized learning and that kind of stuff. And her latest book is called Learning First, Technology Second. And it's, you know, it's all about the pedagogy behind why we do certain things in the classroom and then how you can use technology to support those things. So really excited to dig into that and kind of go through that content. And, you know, I'm hoping that some other people might pick it up too. It sounds like it's going to be a really good thing. I've liked all of the books that Liz has written in the past that I've read. So looking forward to a good experience with that one. So it's Learning First, Technology Second.
Cool.
And that's available through ISTE, I think.
Correct. Yep.
Excellent.
Oh, so is it available in digital form for free? You have to purchase it.
You need to buy it, but then because ISTE doesn't do anything for free.
So it's not just a white paper or something like that.
No. Okay. It is an actual book. Yeah,
okay.
But it is available on Kindle, so you can mm-hmm. purchase an electronic version if you'd like.
Very good. All right. Let's move on to community feedback.
And I'll jump in with a couple of things to mention here. One is an article that is from the district administration website, and it fits right in with our discussion topic today. It's an op-ed article. It says, "Your school's best firewall is already installed. Build on planning and staff education strategies to protect against cyber attacks." And this really resonated with me, Martin, because we've been kind of thinking along these same lines here at the Synod, mm-hmm. and that probably your weakest link in all of your security efforts are your employees, or even in this case, maybe your students in your schools or whatever, but helping people become more defensive in relation to what might look like very trusted materials they receive via email,
like from
or
your
on
good
a
friend
website.
Jason.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Give me your password. I can be trusted. And yeah, there are a lot of tools out there nowadays that will allow you to train people on this. So it'll send out these phishing type emails that may or may not look suspicious to them. And if they click the link, it tracks who clicks the link and reports it back to you so that you can do more training and help them understand why that was a wrong thing to do to click that link.
Mm-hmm.
And we're actually using some tools like that through Sophos mm-hmm. currently at the Synod office. I know that KnowBefore is another vendor that has those kind of efforts. I think they do that kind of thing at MLC as well.
Right, they use KnowBefore at MLC.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So interesting article if you're in a school or church setting and you want to just give some thought to helping people that use your resources, use them more wisely in terms of this phishing threat that's out there.
Just a side note, we do have a relationship with a vendor who is a Sophos reseller, and we get some discounted prices. So if you are interested in checking out the Sophos side of things, contact my office in particular, and I can put you in touch with the appropriate person to give you a price for that. So these are not necessarily free, but this is probably something that's a good investment that really can help train your users. We found it to really be helpful, the Synod office, where we started off, you know, with some pretty bad scores, some people
lots of clicking,
giving up the usernames and the passwords. But now I think they're if nothing else, we've made them more paranoid. Is that a good thing? I don't know.
We're all probably safe not in Jesus' arms.
That's right.
Yeah, but we still got to look out for ninjas.
That's right. That's right. All right.
One more mention in community feedback, and that's for a tool called Pear Deck. Pear, as in the fruit, is something that works with Google Slides to allow you to do formative assessment using a Google slideshow. Rachel Feld recommended this over on the Facebook group Tech Tools for Wells Teachers, and she said it's a great tool for making interactive Google Slides. The vocabulary factory game is fun too. If your students have Chromebooks, this is definitely a tool to try. So maybe something for your summer explorations, teachers, to see if Pear Deck could work for you.
Very good. If you would want to contribute your own stuff, thoughts, questions to our community feedback section, we would love that you would, if you would choose to do that. Go to wellstech.wells.net. That's our show notes page where all the stuff that we talk about is living there with links, etc. Sometimes even pictures, videos, etc. So go there and you can click on any of the links at the top. It'll take you to your favorite social media home, and you can connect with us there. Or you can send us a good old-fashioned email, wellstech@wells.net, and that comes into my inbox and Sally's inbox, and we get it on the show if you'd like it to appear. So very easy to do. Video of the week.
This week, we're going to show a video related to Pear Deck for Google Slides, what I was just talking about. They have a great overview. It's only about a minute and a half long, and it gives you a good idea of what you can do with Pear Deck and looks like cool stuff. So check it out.
Very nice. Jason, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate you taking a little bit of a respite from your Chromebook adventures.
Hey, I appreciate the opportunity for a respite.
Have a great summer.
Good luck with those 1,200.
Yeah. We'll see you
good
in a month.
Good luck for somebody else.
Yes,
yeah, I'll see you in a month. I'm super excited for EdTech Lead. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Hopefully all of our listeners as well.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Coming up next time on the Wells Tech Podcast, we are going to start kind of a series of conversations with our Congregational Services group. Congregational Services used to be called Parish Services. They deal with things like special ministries and evangelism and worship and adult discipleship, and you know, the list goes on. Lots of good things coming out of that group. They've launched a new website, great resources. There will be a paper delivered at Synod Convention by Pastor Jonathan Hine, who is the chairman of Congregational Services, and specifically CCC, I've got to remember what the acronym is, Congregational Counseling Commission, something like that. but we're going to talk to some of those guys over there about some of the great stuff that they're doing and some of the maybe the technology that they're using to accomplish the goals that they have. So tune in next time for that conversation. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will see you soon.